Welcome back to Master the Marketplace with Caspian.
Hi there, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Master the Marketplace with me, Kunal Chopra from Caspian. As most of you know, there's been $1 billion poured into a new industry that's been developing lately, which is around brand acquisitions, especially on marketplaces such as Amazon. And one innovative company that's leading the charge here is Elevate Brands. And we've got the CEO and founder of the company, Ryan Neeson, with us today to talk about the space and how it's developing, and also give us his views on how he plans to grow Elevate Brands within this industry. So Ryan, welcome to the show.
Thanks very much, Kunal. It's wonderful to be here. Thanks for having me.
Excellent. So Ryan, before we get started, I'd love to just learn a little bit about yourself. If you can just tell our listeners, our viewers, a little bit about your background, your history, your story, and how what got you here to Elevate today.
Yeah, with pleasure. So I kind of have a bit of a mongrel background and a mongrel accent. And the reason for that is I grew up in South Africa. So I lived there till I was 14. And then I moved with my family, my parents, we moved to Sydney, where I spent 10 years in Sydney. And so I studied there and I did a business degree in the University of New South Wales in Sydney. And then I got a job out of school. I went to work at Glencore, which is, you know, the world's largest commodities trading company, a Swiss-based company. So I was based in Switzerland for about a year. And then they, you know, I was there for a year. And then, you know, this was 2007. And then at the end of 2007, the company asked me if I'd be happy to move to Indonesia, because it was at a time where the commodity markets were going crazy and there was a great opportunity, they said, for a young guy to go and kind of make a name for himself in a developing market. So I ended up going to Indonesia. I was based there for 8 years. Eventually running the Southeast Asian department for Glencore based in Indonesia. And you know, I did that for 8 years, and middle of 2016, I decided, look, I've had enough of that. I'd like to try do something different. I moved to New York because I thought it would be exciting and there'd be a lot of opportunity. And I was looking for something to do and a business to buy or a business to start. And I came across a friend of mine who was selling on Amazon, and he had this $10 million Amazon business, and it was him and a couple of people. And I was amazed that like a few people, and he had built that business in like 3 years. And I was amazed that, you know, a couple of people could build this pretty nice, decent sized Amazon business so quickly. And so I went to a couple of Amazon conferences, and that's where I got really intrigued by this massive market, right? A massive growing trend, as which is e-commerce. Amazon being the dominant player, but also the level of fragmentation in the industry and on the marketplace was pretty interesting to me, and I thought was compelling. And so I went and started a little Amazon business, and the rest is history, I suppose.
Fantastic. What a great story. You're certainly a world traveler, I must say. I mean, I come from India, so I'm familiar with, you know, Southeast Asia and some, you know, places there. So fantastic to see that you've had some time spent there.
And we did a lot of business in India. I've been to India many times. We did a lot. We used to sell a lot of coal to India.
Right, right. Excellent. So tell us, Ryan, a little bit about Elevate Brands specifically. You know, what's your mission as a company? How do you fit into this space? Would love to learn more about, you know, Elevate specifically.
Yeah, you know, we're very excited about the prospect of developing this new CPG business of the future, right? Where, you know, in the old days, and when I say the old days, I mean, you know, the existing CPG guys, the major players, the Procter & Gamble's of the world and the Johnson & Johnson's of the world, you know, these guys developed a very strong competitive advantage because they had shelf space and they had distribution, right? And it was very hard to compete with those guys because it's very hard to get your product in the center of the shelf where they already had the space. And, you know, Amazon's created this incredibly exciting opportunity where, you know, if you have a great product, you can get yourself to the top of the search algorithm. And, you know, I think, like, I like to say kind of, I feel like the brand age, I don't want to say it's ending, but it's certainly past kind of midday, right? And the product age where really products stand on their own two feet in terms of the quality of the product and the reviews, That's really the main factor there. And Amazon has created this incredible machine, which has given you massive distribution, right, to, you know, hundreds of millions of people across the US, and also as they grow around the world. It's an incredible thing that you can build a business today and compete with some of the very big guys. And people seem to be more interested, depending on the product, people are more interested in the reviews and where it stands on the page versus the actual brand, or whether they saw it on a billboard somewhere. And so that creates all sorts of opportunities. Amazon's has solved the fulfillment and the distribution problem by letting us use FBA. And so that's really exciting. And so we as a company are really kind of riding that trend, right? We believe in creating amazing products, making people really, really happy with our products. And, you know, one of the things that we like to do internally as a company is, for example, like we share some of the best reviews of the week, right? Because that is so important. Being customer centric and being focused on making sure you do have great products, that is critically important for us. And to build this global consumer products company of the future is something that's really exciting.
That's fantastic. You know, as I mentioned in my start, there's so much money and capital getting poured into this space lately, especially around the concept of acquiring brands and then optimizing and growing them on, say, Amazon. Like, how do you see this industry evolve over the next few years? Do you think there'll be more digital-first brands created on Amazon? Do you think that this market is going to get more competitive, where you're going to see more acquisitions of brands happening? Like, how do you see this space evolve? Because it's certainly been a big shift and it's happened very quickly.
Yeah, no, it certainly has. Amazon's third-party marketplace in 2019 did about $200 billion in GMV, just third-party marketplace. And in 2020, that grew to about $295 billion. And, you know, I don't have to tell you, I'm sure you're well aware, but e-commerce essentially grew by 10 years in 3 months, right? I mean, it was at 16% of retail penetration, and then it grew to 27%, you know, within the space of 2020. And so, like, we've seen this massive acceleration, and it is an acceleration because this was a trend that was already there. It was inevitable that it was going to get there. This just accelerated a lot of things. When we look at the space, we say, okay, Amazon's a $300 billion marketplace today. And we've seen reports, you know, whether it's JP Morgan or others, where, you know, they're going to get to $500 billion marketplace within the next, let's say, 5 years. Okay, so it's a massive market to be playing in. And there's room for several players. So you're right that a lot of money has been raised for the space, but it's a massive space. And, you know, when you look at, okay, there's a couple of billion dollars that's been raised to do rollups. Yes, the competitive dynamics are increasing in terms of the number of buyers that are out there, but so are the number of sellers that are increasing as well, right? Because, when we look at the supply-demand fundamentals within the Amazon third-party ecosystem, we're not seeing a really big disconnect. Right. I mean, like we're seeing a lot of new buyers coming in but we're also seeing a lot of new sellers. And what I found interesting is many of the businesses that we've acquired, when we talk to the seller and say, okay, great, you know, you've got a big check that's coming into your bank account tomorrow. What are you going to do with the money? Right. We just kind of have a casual conversation. And what I find fascinating is when we started doing this business, even 18 months ago with the rollups, a lot of the sellers were like, I'm taking the money, I'm going to, you know, invest in somewhere else, and I'm going to do something different with my life. And now almost all of the sellers in the last five businesses we've closed have said, I'm taking 70%, investing it somewhere else, but the other 30%, I'm going back and reinvesting it into a new Amazon brand, and I'm going to start the process again. One of the sellers we just acquired their business, this is their fifth Amazon exit, okay, five exits. And it was a pretty large size business too. So I think it's exciting. I think the space is going to continue to develop and mature. It's fantastic that institutional money is coming now into the space.
Right.
And I think, you know, if you're a seller, it's a great time to be focusing on building a business on Amazon for sure.
Right. I think you're absolutely right. I mean, when we think about the numbers, 1 billion, 2 billion, they sound like they're big numbers, but they're just a small fraction of the overall market at large. I mean, this is a huge market and a global opportunity here. Right.
Totally right. And you mentioned something, you know, about native Amazon brands, right? Mm-hmm. And, you know, years ago, I remembered even when I started on Amazon, I mean, we started our business at the end of 2016. You know, we started originally doing reselling, and then we kind of pivoted and moved to the roll-up and the private label space. But I remember in those days, people would say, well, you know, Amazon brands are not real brands. They're products. You can't call them a real brand. And, you know, that is definitely not the case today. I mean, Anchor proved that, for example, where they did their IPO last year, and it's a $10 billion plus business, you know, native Amazon. I think 70% of their business or something is Amazon. And for several years, it was all primarily Amazon. So, you know, they've proved the case. They've kind of run the 4-minute mile, if you want to call it that. And there's a lot of brands that are starting to follow suit now. So, yeah, it's doable.
Fantastic. Now, in parallel, one of the markets that we follow is the seller services market. You know, folks like Caspian, this is where we play in. We support brands to help them build their businesses on different marketplaces. So how do you see brand acquirers like yourself and other players sort of developing their own operations? Like, how does that sort of evolve over time? Like, do you think it's best to take it in-house? Is it work with the third party? Like, how do you see that play out?
Yeah, I think we've noticed what some of the other roll-ups have done is, you know, they'll buy businesses and then hand it over to an agency such as yourself,
right?
And you can understand the logic for that, because we all know that running an Amazon business is not straightforward at all, right? It's very complicated. A lot can go wrong, whether it's on supply chain or, black hat kind of, you know, hijacked listings. I mean, there's a lot of things that can go wrong. And even just screwing up with keywords can send your listing back 50% if you don't do something properly. So I mean, yes, I think it makes sense for a lot of guys, particularly if they're not familiar with the space, to use an agency. Now, in the case of someone like ourselves, we believe managing the brands ourselves is a core competency. Right. So we do manage it ourselves, and we believe we're really, really good at it. And our track record proves that, because we've been able to grow our brands, well over 100% kind of post acquisition. But having said that, you know, sometimes you buy brands faster than you have it's one of the challenges you have is always, how do you scale your team at the same pace as you acquire businesses? Right. And you're never going to get that perfect. And so to the extent that there's a disconnect where maybe you've acquired faster than you've been able to scale the team, then there's an opportunity to potentially use an agency, even if it's on a short-term interim basis while you build out the rest of the team. So, you know, I think different companies have different strategies and ways of thinking about this. But, you know, for sure, there's a bunch of really, really, strong skills within the agencies like yourselves. So it makes sense to work with guys like you.
Yeah, we have seen that with a few other brands that we've worked with as well. They've been very direct with us and saying, look, we want to take our operations in-house, and we'd really want to work with Caspian to help take us there. You know, so we want to start with you. You educate us, you help us, and help us bring this in-house over time. And that's a perfectly, you know, acceptable answer to us, you know, which is, yeah, we would love to start off with you and then help you take it in-house and, you know, educate you, give you the tools, software, whatever you need as you're figuring out your operations. So it makes sense. And I completely agree with your statement, which is, it is a competitive edge, by being more operationally driven, rolling up your sleeves, helping build these brands, to your point on customer centricity upfront. That is a true value add you can add to some of these brands to grow them 100% year over year.
Yeah. Well, that that's the key. You know, part of the thing that differentiates one company versus another is, you know, if one guy can grow the brand 30%, and the other one is 70%, and the other one's 200%. It's not anyone can buy a business, but what's done after you buy the business is really what we focus on. You know, we see ourselves really as brand operators more than anything else.
That makes sense, because I've also seen a few other more financial buyers approach us and say, well, we are, you know, we're just going to put money in because you're seeing this trend, but we just don't have the operational expertise. Yeah. I personally believe that's the wrong approach, but, you know, we're more than happy to take the account, for example. But, we want to educate these brands and hopefully, you know, we educate them to take their operations in-house. Sorry, you were saying?
Yeah, listen, I'm sure you won't mind if someone gives you a whole bunch of business, but, It's interesting because there are guys who look at this and say, okay, well, this is just, it's just pure financial arbitrage. I buy a business that's trading at 3.5 times EBITDA. And if I buy 10 of them and put them together, well, now I can get, 7 or 8 times EBITDA. And so there's a financial arb spread there. And that may be true, provided the businesses continue to operate. But in many cases, the business go backwards. But, we don't look at it that way. I mean, we think that's an interesting dynamic in the market. But we look at it and say, what we're really going to focus on is the operational arbitrage, where you can come in and you find a seller who maybe had 2 or 3 or 4 people on the team, but we're not experts across all the various aspects of the business. And so, we have world-class marketing people who do the PPC and branding and creative work. And we have world-class supply chain people. And, we have world-class, customer service people, and we have world-class M&A people. And so, when we get a business, we can really pull all of those levers and really sort of optimize and squeeze each of the various aspects. So that's what we've done, and we found great success. And the interesting thing is the bar on Amazon, for the most part, is not super high yet, right? I mean, a lot of these businesses do have a lot of low-hanging fruit to be able to optimize the business, but we're seeing a noticeable, noticeable yet gradual improvement over time. And I think if you look back in 5 years' time, I think you're going to see that the whole sort of professionalism of the third-party ecosystem is going to dramatically improve in terms of branding and creative and all the various aspects, because it's becoming more competitive. So you'll have to be successful.
I completely agree. So Ryan, give me your thoughts on other marketplaces outside of Amazon. Like, what's your view on Walmart, eBay, Target Plus, all these other marketplaces that have propped up lately? Of course, Amazon is the behemoth here. But how do you see this more omni marketplace sort of approach play out over the next few years?
Yeah. Yes, it's something that we're all paying, we're paying close attention to. As you say, Amazon is the behemoth. Right. I mean, Amazon is making up, close to 50% of e-commerce. And so, that's where most of the action is today. And having said that, Walmart, I think, Walmart grew, in the first quarter of last year, Walmart's e-commerce grew 75%. Right. And I'm not sure what the full year growth was, but it was significant. So they're clearly investing heavily in it. They're clearly making very strong progress. I think their grocery category is the strongest part of their online portfolio. But as it relates to us, we sell on Walmart and we sell on eBay. We haven't yet sold on Target yet, but I can tell you, you have to ask yourselves, is the juice worth the squeeze sometimes, right? In the sense that I think, Walmart has something like 50,000 sellers, and Amazon has in the US, and Amazon has something like over 1 million, right? I think Amazon has like 3 million worldwide, but about 1 million in the US. And because there are so many sellers, there's on Amazon, there's a lot of variety and a lot of competition and a lot of great prices. And so that brings a lot of customers. And because there's more customers coming to Amazon, that creates more sellers. And so that flywheel effect is spinning really, really fast for Amazon at the moment. And they've done a tremendous amount of work making the third party sort of seller central, and the tools that third party sellers have to use. Like, those tools are really advanced and really helpful for helping us get insights into, sales rank and various other things. Walmart hasn't quite developed the same sophistication on their platform, so it's harder to use. There's not as many customers there. So while it's important for us to keep working with some of the other platforms, we, like a lot of other people, are going to focus where the highest kind of ROI for our time, effort, energy, resources is. And that's Amazon today. So we'll watch closely. We'll see how it evolves. But it's challenging for some of those other guys to catch Amazon, because that flywheel is spinning so quickly for Amazon. It is challenging, but hopefully they're going to get there, because we as sellers would love the diversification. I mean, if Walmart could be 50% of our business, fantastic. We would love that. And so we're rooting for them to improve and grow and optimize their marketplace. But I think they're a few years away from being anywhere near where Amazon is today, if they ever get there, right? And so we'll see.
I think you're right. I mean, we help our brands sell on Walmart, eBay, Target Plus, etc. And just how we integrate with Amazon is a completely different story relative to all these other marketplaces. Just in terms of simple things like getting listings up there and everything, I mean, the tool sets and everything are just behind the curve right now, just in terms of managing the brand. And so it's a resource constraint on companies like us, and we've got to, you know, try to analyze whether the juice is worth the squeeze. So you're absolutely right. Yeah, exactly. Relative to the kind of volume that you would get on the platform.
Yep, true.
So I was talking to a private equity investor in India recently, and he was talking about how this space is wide open in some of the international countries. Like, let's take India as an example. And there is no one's thinking about acquiring brands. There are some really good Amazon-first brands getting created there. How do you see the international story play out? Like, will we see a Elevate for India in the future?
The answer is yes. We're getting there. I mean, we're announcing our Series A in the next few days. We're about to close. We closed a large sort of debt facility a few weeks ago, and our Series A equity round is closing, within the next day or two. As we get more resources to be able to scale the business, we will certainly start to look at other markets. The market today in the US is big enough, right? There's plenty of opportunity. And so, you know, for our point of view today, it doesn't make sense for us to go spread ourselves too thin when we have more than enough opportunity. And sometimes avoiding the shiny penny is important, where you just need to focus and execute on the opportunity in front of you. But having said that, for sure, India is a massively growing market. And, they've got Amazon there, which is doing pretty nicely. Flipkart, obviously, is also one of the dominant groups in the space there. As I understand it, most of the Indian third-party sellers, there's a lot of them. There's a tremendous amount of sellers, but they're really, really small sellers, right? And so, you know, for us today, when we started out doing acquisitions, our first business was like a $200,000 acquisition, right? Just over $200,000. Whereas today, like, we need much, much bigger businesses to be able to make sense, because we obviously have like a resource constraint. So, you know, as the Indian marketplace gets bigger, that becomes more exciting to us. And the same thing applies to other parts of the world in Asia. I mean, we're already looking in Europe. That's a market that we're excited about. One of the guys who's joining our board of investors is the chairman of Shopee, one of the biggest e-commerce platforms in Southeast Asia. So we did that strategically. So we're interested in it. We will be there. It's a question of time and how sort of quickly those marketplaces evolve and develop. And I think within the next sort of 2 or 3 years, it becomes very viable for sure.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. I mean, there are tons of sellers, and taking India as an example, you know, tons of sellers, really small volumes. And then there are a few that are starting to crop up that are really dominating the Amazon.in space, natively created Amazon first brands. So I think you're right. We'll see this evolve over time. The tool sets have to catch up. For example, you know, most sellers in India are still using spreadsheets to run their business. And it's at that stage of evolution at some level, you know, so there's an education that needs to happen. These folks, I mean, think about the folks there, right? Like, they're, you know, small shops, they have their brands in small shops. And now, you know, this Amazon is a digital platform. These folks have no view on how to run a business there.
Sure. And at the same time, you do have this kind of leapfrogging effect, right, in developing countries. So, you know, China's e-commerce is I think, three times the size of the US already. And if you look at, for example, social commerce, right, buying things on social networks, well, the US, I believe, is at around $35 billion last year of social commerce, and China's 10 times bigger. It's like $330 billion or something, and growing much faster. So it's interesting to see how different ways of shopping evolve in different markets. You know, whether social shopping becomes a much bigger trend in the US remains to be seen. I think there's a strong argument that it will become that. And, you know, that may well happen in developing countries too. And so, like, it's interesting to just see how different markets develop in their own way.
That's right. That's right. So Ryan, what about this whole Shopify debate that's been happening out there, these days around, direct to consumer, your own website, your own platform? How do you see, for the brands that you're creating, how does the Shopify's of the world sort of flow into the Amazon, the argument versus marketplace versus direct to my own website? How do you see that play out?
Well, it's definitely something to watch out for. Shopify's share price grew, I think, 150-odd% last year. Amazon grew, I think, 60% or 70% there or thereabout.
Right.
So Shopify is growing at a much faster pace. Okay, it's coming off a smaller base for sure, but Shopify looks like they're going to be a real contender. And there's been a bunch of discussion about them building their own sort of fulfillment centers. Because that is the critical factor, is that, we can scale our business so easily because we're using FBA. And if Shopify can solve that logistical issue, then they can be a real contender too. So, when we buy Amazon businesses, sometimes the businesses already have a Shopify store and we continue to run it. Sometimes they don't, and then we build a Shopify store. So it creates diversification for us, which is great. And some brands are more conducive than others. I mean, we have some brands that are like, we have a tent, for example. It's a really cool product and it does really well on social and it does really well on Shopify because it's really cool and it looks, it's kind of a unique design. It's really good. But other brands, we have some hardware tools that are really unsexy products. They do well on Amazon because it's a very specific niche. But, for us to go and market that on Shopify or on social doesn't really make any sense. So it's a case by case basis. But Shopify is I think important as a part of anyone's D2C strategy.
So speaking of what you just said, are there specific categories that you focus on at Elevate, or you're category agnostic?
Yeah, we're category agnostic. So if it meets our investment criteria, we're agnostic today. And that may evolve over time as we find maybe we have competitive advantages in one niche versus another. But today we've had success. I like to joke, shoes and sugar. We were a big seller of shoes in the early days. And then when COVID hit, we actually started buying some grocery products and selling them on Amazon too. And whether you're selling shoes or sugar, it's very similar in terms of how you sell it on Amazon, right? And it's mastery over the platform that counts. Now, certain categories are a little more tricky. I think grocery and perishables, in terms of the supply chain and how you manage that, is kind of different to, our hardware tool, for example, but we're agnostic to that. Yeah.
Excellent. Excellent. And so Ryan, just on consolidation of this industry, how do you see that sort of play out? Do you think most brands will want to go through this consolidation strategy? Do you think that we'll see a few large players like yourself, like Trash.io and all these other companies sort of conglomerate some of these brands together? How do you see the consolidation story play out over time?
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely a lot of consolidation happening. There's a lot of consolidation happening, and I think it will continue to happen, right? So, yeah. I mean, if there's 3 million Amazon third-party sellers, if you counted all the aggregators today and how many businesses they've acquired, you would probably be under 250 businesses, right? Out of hundreds of thousands. So while the consolidation is happening, there's a long way to go before the consolidation gets anywhere near even, let's say, 10%.
Right.
And so it's inevitable. There will be some big players emerge. But it's still, Amazon third party marketplace is still the most fragmented marketplace in the world. And I think it will continue to be for some time. I think some of the aggregators will start aggregating each other. Right. And that kind of makes sense, because at some point, if you can go buy a business that has 25 or 30 businesses, that's a lot easier than doing 25 or 30 separate deals, right? Even if you pay a small premium for that. So I think that will continue to play out over the sort of months and years ahead.
I think you're right. We're also seeing, in just our research, some consolidation of the seller services market as well. And I also see that sort of play out over time. You know, maybe aggregators will acquire smaller tools and other services, agencies potentially, to help further their operational prowess in this space. So, you know, we should certainly see some consolidation, but you're right, the numbers are so big that any consolidation that might sound big to us is really a fraction of the overall size that we're dealing with here.
Yeah, it's a fraction. And it's going to be very interesting to see how it plays, because, you know, the aggregators who are coming in, especially the guys who are coming in now, which is, I don't know if you call it late to the game or early to the game. I mean, we'll see how it plays out. But as the multiples go up slightly and you're borrowing at high interest debt to be able to buy these businesses, at some point, you know, you have to be able to grow them significantly. Otherwise, the economics just don't make sense. Right. So
exactly.
So, you know, again, it comes back to like real operational sort of prowess and expertise, and that's what's going to win long term.
Excellent. So, Ryan, last question. You know, how do you source your leads, your prospects for brands? If there's a brand listening to us right now, they're interested in selling, how should they get in touch with you?
Yeah, sure. So if someone's interested in selling, or even if they're not interested in selling, but just want to understand what the selling process looks like or how it works, or just want to get some information, what do they need to do to kind of improve their business to be able to sell? So you can contact me, ryan@elevatebrands.io, which is the easiest way. And, you know, we love talking with sellers. We're entrepreneurs ourselves. We started as sellers ourselves, so we kind of get it. We know what it's like to kind of have your account shut down or be on the phone with seller support and not get anywhere for 2 days. And, you know, we've got some of the scars, you know, to prove that we've been on Amazon for a few years. And so, listen, we love talking to sellers and sharing stories. And if they want to sell to us, fantastic. And if they would just want to chat, then that's great as well.
Fantastic. Well, Ryan, thank you so much. Your insights on this episode were very valuable. I really appreciate you taking the time to speak with us today. We wish you all the best with Elevate Brands, and hopefully we'll see you in the press. Congratulations on your round as well. And we are rooting for you.
Thanks very much. It's great talking with you, and also wish you lots of luck.
Well, thank you everyone for joining us on another episode of Master the Marketplace. We will see you soon next time. Thank you.
Through conversations with experts in online retail, with years of marketing, compliance, and inventory management experience, we seek to empower our listeners to master the marketplace. Thanks for listening. We hope to see you next time on Master the Marketplace with Caspian.